On Monday, we read from your emails. During our program on national parks, we received several appreciations of some lesser-known national treasures. Rob Stein in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, suggested Theodore Roosevelt National Park in western North Dakota. Among its attractions, he listed Badlands, coniferous forest and high plains, bison, prairie dogs, antelope, and lots of plains birds. It's not as highly visited as other parks, and he said you can have a great western wilderness experience there. Laura Ann Welch spends her summers in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and has two parks to pitch. The Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore, which hugs the shore of Lake Superior, has spectacular rock formations, a birch forest wilderness area, and real sand dunes. Then, way out in Lake Superior, almost to Canada, is Isle Royale National Park, an archipelago accessible by plane or by boat, whose season is basically over in September. These parks have beautiful vistas and opportunities for outdoor experiences many people think are only available in the mega parks. They are, she says, worth a look. During our D-Day discussion last week, several listeners emailed with their own family stories. Eric Peterson in St. Augustine, Florida, wrote about his grandfather who served in the Army Air Corps during World War II and was stationed in northern Italy. "He's no longer with us," wrote Eric, "but when going through his personal belongings, our family found his flight mission logbook. He was a side gunner on a B-24. One of his entries indicated that a big mission was coming up the next day and that the base was buzzing with anticipation, though no one knew what the mission was. He felt this one might even make the papers. The mission was the D-Day invasion." Victor Keithley from Applegate, California, emailed during our program on the uses and abuses of language with a bone to pick for our guest, linguist Jeffrey Nunberg. "Go back and listen to the show," wrote Victor, "and you'll sort of hear one of the usages that sort of drives me up the wall. Sort of. I was particularly disappointed to hear Mr. Nunberg use such a construction. I sort of listen almost exclusively to NPR for the sort of obvious reasons. I am flabbergasted to hear the number of people who can't get from one end of a sentence to the other without tossing in several sort ofs." Well, we've asked Jeffrey Nunberg to rejoin us, and he joins us now on the phone. Thanks very much.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. First, here's the evidence. Here you are describing the use of the word like.
That's something that came originally from the hipsters. And was sort of passed into the standard language from the hipsters to the disc jockeys.
And I sort of heard you say sort of there.
Well, you sort of did. You know, we all have our tics and twitches, and there's a sense in which I think radio and the broadcast media magnify these so that they suddenly seem enormously glaring where they pass unnoticed in ordinary speech. But sort of is something I will sort of try to expunge from my discourse in the future.
While we have you here, we should note that your newest book examines the role of language in politics. This week, of course, we're remembering the presidency of Ronald Reagan. As you look back, what stands out for you about the man who became known as the Great Communicator?
I think Reagan really understood how the media had transformed the traditional rituals and forms of political life. I recall the 1980 debate with Jimmy Carter, when the presidents were asked to make closing remarks, and Carter began, "When the American people go to the polls in November," and so forth. And Reagan said, he addressed the audience in the second person, he said, "When you go to the polls in November, I hope you will," and so forth. And it was that ability to speak through the press, through the media, and establish a kind of one-to-one relationship with the viewers that created a sense that of someone with a special rapport with the American people.
Jeffrey Nunberg, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Nunberg, senior language researcher at Stanford University, the author most recently of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times. He joined us from his home in San Francisco. We end with a couple of more emails from our show on contemporary Christian music. Curtis Gaylord of Wichita, Kansas wrote, "I've heard of Christian rock, Christian rap, Christian hip-hop, Christian hard metal. Is there Christian jazz?" Well, we can cite this email from a listener named Pedro in Utah, who cited jazz by musicians outside of the Christian genre, including Duke Ellington's Sacred Concerts and John Coltrane's A Love Supreme. Well, thank you, Pedro, for suggesting our closing music for the day. This from John Coltrane. If you have questions or comments, email them to us. Our address, TOTN@NPR.org. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, Joel Riddle, Kara Arsenault, and Dustin Dwyer. Chad Campbell directs the program, Brendan Banaszak assists in producing it, and Martina Castro is our intern. Kevin Wade is the technical director. He gets engineering help from Vince Muse, Burke Hunn, and Neil Ellis. Sue Goodwin is our senior producer. Ellen Silva is the senior editor. Leith Bishop is the executive producer. And welcome, Becky Vlamis. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.